Dumb Dumb. Fat Bike Radio presents The Weekly Dose of Fat, starring Sven as Dr. Emilio Lizardo, co-starring Gnomez, playing the role of Dr. Quest, with J.K. living firmly ensconced in the role of Colombian streetwalker Sugar Pants.
Sugar Pants.
This is show number 113. Dum dum.
Lucky number 113.
So, would fat bikes exist without disc brakes, man?
Maybe. I think the original Pug had.
But could you
cantilever brakes on there? V brakes.
Yeah, I've actually seen a fat bike with V brakes on it. And I just don't think that, I think that disc brakes are a big step in us having fat bikes. And I'd like to start off the show with a little letter to my friends at SRAM. Dear SRAM, as an encore to the Avid Codes and Elixirs, we received a set of your SRAM Guide RS brakes. They failed after 200 yards. I have two sets of Shimano XT brakes, and they seem to operate in a rather sterling fashion.
I just tell them to scram.
What are those German brakes you love?
Oh, you talk about the Magura.
I can never remember that name.
Magura.
But I always remember that you run those brakes.
Not so much anymore.
No? Do you have any XTs?
The reason that I liked them is because they were mineral oil.
Oh.
No, I mostly run mechanicals now. I don't go fast enough to need anything that stops really fast.
All right. Well, Avid mechanicals work.
Although I do have a set of guides on my bike, and I haven't had any problems with them yet on my my Ape. So,
well, we'll.
But you have. So tell us about your problems.
Well, they just locked up onto the caliper when I was bedding in the pads. It's like,
for no apparent reason.
Yeah, I had to carry the bike back to the garage.
At least it was only 200 yards.
Like, come on, man. SRAM. Is that
like schmelt? Because, you know, do you call it a smelt or a schmelt? If you're from Milwaukee, you call it a schmelt. But really.
So you're saying SRAM.
SRAM.
And I'm saying SRAM.
It's like, do you say swag or swag?
I see. Well, maybe if I knew how to pronounce the name correctly, maybe the brakes would have worked.
There you go.
So if you buy a bike with some SRAM brakes, don't call them SRAM brakes because they'll lock up on your rotor and then you'll have to carry your bike home. You learn that. You learn some things, some amazing things here on the Weekly Dose of Fat.
Right on. So the Avid mechanicals work okay though, right?
Yeah, and the good thing about SRAM is they actually pioneered the 1x18 drivetrain. I think it's called the Monitor Lizard Grupo.
Where the large chain ring is as big as the rim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Mm-hmm. Isn't this an e-bike call-in show?
Our Surface 604 fatty bike is powering this entire broadcast.
So what's on the e-show this e-week, e-color announcer, e-guy?
Make a joyful noise. Our schedule for this evening's choir practice will commence in the presence of gnomes with hymn number 351. Please turn your hymn books to page 88 and sing with me.
The event of the week.
We talked to Morgan from People on Bikes about official e-bike policy from the bicycle advocacy side of the table. We take calls from our listeners about what they think about e-bikes in the fat, mountain, and cargo categories. We answer a listener question about...
What bike should I buy?
Oh, hey, wait, that's Justin! There is no Fatty Farm Field Report due to Tsunami Brad.
Fuck Brad.
This evening's
5 minutes in
segment, we'll talk about a couple of road shows that we'll be recording this winter.
I think we're going to have a swear jar.
Had I known that I would get scolded for swearing, I would have sweared sooner.
Hey, you forgot links. I worked my ass off getting those links.
And you know who else we should probably introduce here? We have our ambassador, Fatmaster to the Netherlands, Mr. Ian And I don't know, and I actually practiced several crazy ways to say your last name. Let me just throw a few at you. Nikod.
Incorrect.
Wrong.
Nikod.
Oh, wrong.
Wrong again.
Wrong.
Nikod.
Wrong. Wrong.
Naked.
Think French.
Uh-huh. Nikal.
Close. Niku.
Niku.
Niku. Does it have a D at the end?
It does. Silent.
There's a Niku that has a body shop up in Port Washington.
That's my uncle.
Bill.
Yeah, he's my uncle.
He does a great job on fixing up cars when you hit deer and shit like that.
Painter, too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I knew him from the BMW club.
Yeah.
So that's the BMW section of this show.
Damn.
Hey, you know what else we got besides Ian?
What?
We got a caller.
Yeah.
Hey, caller. How you doing?
Yeah. What's up, fellas?
It's Travis from Anchorage. Yeah, and Ian can't.
Ian doesn't have any cans. He can't hear. Ian's like, hear Travis.
Wait, they're talking to ghosts. But it's Travis.
Oh, you know what?
Greg likes to cut those belches out.
I could probably find some headphones for Ian. Anyway, what's up, Travis?
I just got back from a ride on a little snow and ice. What we got left?
Yeah, yeah. Pop quiz, Travis.
Yeah.
How do you feel about e-bikes on your trails?
I am cool with e-bikes on my trails if people need them due to illness, physical disability, injury. I don't have a problem with that at all. If you're just making the trail and the climbs easier, you know, get in shape.
So you guys got a lot of double track trails where other motorized vehicles like Jeeps and snowmobiles and four wheelers and all that other kind of stuff go. Do you have any specific trails that are really bike only where they would be like non-motorized traffic? How would you feel about it on them with the motor on the bike then?
Yeah, that kind of brings in a whole new question. Yeah, we do have, you know, multi-use trails that are kind of hiker, biker, skier only. And, you know, I'd like to see, I guess, some evidence. I wouldn't have a problem with them on any of those trails in the wintertime when there's the snowpack down or even an ice flare, which is pretty much what we've been riding on for the last 3 years. But, yeah, summertime and muddy conditions, I guess I'd be, you know, interested to see a little more study on the impact on the trails. Cause,
there is a study.
I've tested a few e-bikes.
Study.
And they've really got torque, man.
There is a study that IMBA paid for. Where they tested an mountain bike versus a mountain bike versus a motorcycle. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes for you to take a look at. Have you ever put on your Sunday best and ridden an e-bike, sir?
I have test driven a couple in bike shop parking lots.
Okay.
And I was,
so you know what it
I
feels
was
like.
Blown away by the torque on that and the takeoff. It was... Yeah, it was pretty crazy experience.
I think people that live in a cold climate like Alaska are going to find that those batteries just don't last.
You're going to need
I think it's a new product. We need an e-bike battery heater.com.
Oh, bam, right there. Like a little blanket, a little old down vest for your down tube.
Right, right.
Koozie.
Yeah,
you know, it could be like a pilot relief tube where you whiz into the hose and your whiz goes down there and keeps it warm.
That would be something.
Oh yeah,
I'm not sure what, but it would be something.
It'd keep your weasel warm too. I think that's somebody's.
Yeah, Becker's got a bag for that.
isn't that somebody's hashtag? Hashtag keep your weasel warm. Yeah, we can all take three guesses who that is. Hey, don't we have like a station break coming up or something?
Yeah,
what?
We could do that already. I guess when we come back, we'll talk to Morgan from People on Bikes.
Yeah, all that and more after this break, brought to you by Los Gachos de Capibara Butar.
Up in the Great White North, they make bikes for every trail and every season. RSD guarantees you'll have a smoking good time carving lines with their fatty mare. Next season, the big guy gets new builds with an optional Bluto fork up front, 1x11 setups, and new colors too. The most playful fatty on the market still clocks in under 30 pounds for less than 2 grand. Or talk to your RSD bike dealer about any of the trick new options. And always keep the rubber side down.
You're tuned to Fat Bike Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Tonight, we're talking to our special guest, Morgan Lomelee from People for Bikes. And welcome to the show, Morgan.
Thank you.
So, People for Bikes, can you give us a little background on what that organization does and the mission it has?
Yeah, People for Bikes is the industry-led nonprofit organization that tries to make bicycling better for everyone and improve everybody's ride. So we work on advocating for bicycle infrastructure and also work on the state and federal levels to improve bicycle laws around the country.
So you guys are part of the Bicycle Suppliers Association, correct?
Well, the Bicycle Product Suppliers Association is the organization that represents all the bicycle suppliers. So People for Bikes is a nonprofit group, and BPSA is the trade organization for the bicycle industry.
Gotcha. So, I mean, e-bikes are not a brand new thing. They've been around for a while now. How do they kind of fit into what People for Bikes is doing?
Well, we find that e-bikes are a great way to attract new people into cycling. The kinds of people who are buying an electric bicycle and using them aren't traditional cyclists. They've either been turned away from cycling because, either they live on a big hill or have a long commute or might have a physical disability or any other reason why bicycling wasn't an option for them. But a small, low-speed motor on a bicycle is enabling them to get around by bike for transportation and for fun. So we see it as a way to get more people riding bikes, which is what we want at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic goal. So have you ridden e-bikes yourself?
Yes, and I consider myself kind of the poster child for someone who's a lifelong cyclist but has incorporated an electric bicycle into my everyday life. I have 2 kids under 2, and I have been able to ride them to daycare every day on a long-tail electric cargo bike. Last week, I bought $250 worth of groceries with both kids on the bike and hauled that all the way up the hill to my house. I ride one generally on a daily basis, and I find myself riding my other bikes as often as I used to, whether it's a mountain bike or a road bike or just a non-motor traditional bicycle. So their utility is really fantastic, and it's exciting what you can do with an electric bicycle that you either can't do with a car or can't do with a traditional bike.
Right, cool. So you do or have ridden mountain bikes on local trails or single track, that type of thing too, correct?
Electric mountain bikes?
No, just any mountain bike in general, really. Just, go out mountain biking on a trail on your traditional mountain bike.
Yep. I used to work for the International Mountain Bicycling Association, and I'm a lifelong mountain biker as well. I would identify first and foremost as a mountain biker.
Yeah. Cool. So I think that puts you in a good position being a user of an electric bike as well as being an avid mountain biker. How do you see electric bikes, especially pedal assist bikes versus bikes that simply have a throttle on them, fitting into like a single track situation where traditionally it's been just human powered mountain bikes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where things get a little more dicey, simply because an electric mountain bike does have a motor. And so a lot of people's initial reaction is to say, well, it's therefore a motorized vehicle. But it's not a motorized vehicle in the same vein as a motorcycle or a combustion engine vehicle that emits, fumes, makes noise, is a very much more powerful machine than an electric mountain bike. So People for Bikes and the Bicycle Product Suppliers Association recognize that if you were to allow an electric mountain bike on all trails that are open to non-motorized vehicles, that might not be the best policy solution. So what we really advocate are 2 things. One is encouraging anyone who wants to ride an electric mountain bike to do so on trails that are only open to motorized uses. And there are 300,000 miles of trails open to motorized use, and some of them are really spectacular single track trails, so 300,000 miles in the country. We're inventorying all the great single track rides in the country that are open to EMTBs, and we found about 10,000 miles of trails of truly fantastic single track where you can ride And the second thing we're trying to do is just from a policy perspective, taking the long game here and trying to work with federal land management agencies like the Forest Service and the BLM, both of whom generally manage most of the recreation trails in the country that are open to bikes. Try to get them to portray e-mountain bikes as not a traditional mountain bike, right, and not a motorized vehicle like a motorcycle or an ATV, but somewhere in between, and maybe think through ways that we could promote responsible access for electric mountain bikes on non-motorized trails down the line, not tomorrow, but within the next 5-10 years. So it's a new way to use public lands, and it's a new way to get people outside enjoying our public lands. But the policy atmosphere around how to regulate EMTBs is still very much up for discussion. We try to be at the table during that discussion so that people who do want to ride an EMTB can do so where they want.
Right on. So do you make a differentiation between a pedal assist bike where you actually have to put input into the pedals and you get an assist versus something that has either, you know, pedals that don't do anything but move the bike, but it has a throttle on it rather than an assist? So is there a difference in your goal for these policies between those two types of vehicles?
Yep. So there are three classes of electric bicycles. And what we're talking about are low-speed electric bicycles. Anything that's beyond this is truly a motorcycle or an electric motorcycle. So the three classes are class one, which is a pedal assist e-bike where you have to be pedaling to engage the motor, where the motor maxes out at 20 miles an hour. So you can go as fast as you want, but as soon as the motor senses that the bike has hit 20 miles an hour, the motor shuts off. The class two is a throttle-actuated e-bike, so the same kind of e-bike, but you don't have to be pedaling to engage the motor. You can twist the throttle and get going. And I see these as a great bike for people who don't have the power or have a disability and can't propel the bike forward. And class three e-bikes are pedal assist only, but the motor maxes out at 28 miles an hour, so they go a little bit faster. And when we talk about trying to at least work with land management agencies on a trail-by-trail basis, thinking about where an EMTB might make sense on a non-motorized trail. And again, these conversations are very preliminary, and right now we're really focused on encouraging people to ride on motorized trails. But when we do have those conversations, we say we're only advocating for Class 1 EMTBs, so pedal-assist, very low-speed EMTBs, to be classified as this new kind of bike that might in the future be able to have access on non-motorized trails.
Okay, so on a class...
And one more thing about that is that we've partnered with the International Mountain Bicycling Association trying to look at whether these low-speed Class 1 electric mountain bikes cause any natural resource damage or trail damage. And really, they're almost the same as a regular mountain bike. So anytime you're on a trail, you cause a small level of damage up to, you know, a lot of damage. And regular mountain bikes and Class 1 EMTBs really don't cause a lot of premature soil displacement or trail erosion or general trail damage. So we're more trying to figure out the social sides of things, how people can interact with an EMTB on trail if they're walking or hiking or on a traditional bike.
Right. Yeah, I think this is what we've discovered talking to people, you know, leading up to this show, is that it's in the infancy of how these are going to fit in. And, you know, appreciate that you guys are kind of at the leading edge of it, along with IMBA, to try and, you know, get out ahead of the game and make sure that there's not a lot of use that is unregulated or detrimental to our existing trail systems. But, you know, I think you guys are on the right path. I certainly like to keep up with this because, again, it's in its infancy. So, you know, I think there's a lot more to the discussion than has happened so far.
Yeah, and it's important to note that, you know, some of the policy inroads that IMBA has made over the last 30 years to gain equal access for mountain bikes on trails is just second to none. And any work that we do to promote electric mountain bikes on trails, it has to be incredibly sensitive to that. We don't want to give fodder to any anti-mountain bike advocates to say, you know, if you're allowing EMTBs on trails, then you should just blanket ban all mountain bikes. I mean, that would just be catastrophic for mountain biking in general. So the conversation really does revolve around at first trying to understand the technology, promote people, or advocate for people to ride on on motorized trails so that mountain bikers are, you know, continue to be a respectful group of folks, and just start the conversation with Forest Service and the BLM thinking about, you know, where they might fit on non-motorized trails. It's a process.
Yeah, for sure. I know. I mean, we've had a couple of fat bikes that are e-powered, both pedal assist, and one from Specialized and another one from a smaller manufacturer in Canada. And I know that, you know, a big company like Specialized or Trek that's planning products is a couple years down the road already on what their plans are. How do you see the manufacturers fitting in with kind of the education and, you know, enlightening people as to what these bikes are capable of?
Yeah, I mean, they're a huge part of it, and I'm accountable to the industry when it comes to this. If you think about it, everyone buys their bike in a shop. So the best way to communicate to people where they can ride, how they can be involved, joining up with a community of e-bike riders is through the shops. So through the manufacturers and through the reps, we're trying to give them all the information they need so that, you know, at the point of sale, someone has all the information they want about e-bikes.
Very good.
They make some really exciting products, and they're excited to get more people on bikes too. So.
Yeah, cool. Well, I appreciate you taking time to talk to us today, and I think maybe we'll catch up down the trail a little bit and see, you know, once we get a little bit more info on how people are using them and what's actually happening with legislation and such, we'd like to get an update. So thanks for catching up with us.
If anyone would like more information, just go to peopleforbikes.org/e-bikes. So e-bikes.
Okay, we'll put that link in the show notes. Thanks very much, Morgan. Have a good one.
My pleasure.
Okay.
You too.
Yep, bye.
You're tuned to Fat Bike Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the radio program.
We're back from the break, and I just want to send a shout-out to the Rifleman, Jordan Wakely. Bonne chance for a glorious victory at Iceman Cometh this weekend, mein Freund.
What the fuck did you just say?
What?
You can't just slip in the event of the week as a shout-out.
But he just did.
No. Uh-uh. No. I spent time researching and writing a special piece about the real event of the week. The event of the week is the Iceman Cometh.
Well played, all sport.
Yes, Ben. That was like a Kurt Gowdy on American Sportsman, man.
Hey!
In-depth sports reporting.
Hey, Norm! Let's take calls from our listener.
Yeah. So let's do that. How about we do take a call from one of our listener?
All right.
Welcome to the radio program. Who do we have on the line from Oregon?
This is Keith from Sun River.
Right on, man.
Hey, Keith. How are you?
Thanks for calling in. Gomez is going to lead you through the hymnal.
Oh, Lord. Have you ever ridden an e-bike, sir?
Not yet.
All right.
They're definitely prohibited here on most of our trails, but I would totally be interested in trying one just for the sheer ability to make the climbs quicker so I could do more downhill.
Yeah, that's something that Sven had brought up, is that for shuttles.
It was my plan if I'd gone to Vegas to ride one up at Boot Creek Black mm-hmm. Lizard Canyon there mm-hmm. to for that very reason. Instead of waiting for the diesel truck to take you up there, you could do it on your own. Get more time in on the downhills.
So what are your thoughts about e-bikes on your home trails? And I'm going to be talking specifically to people asking that question about, how do you feel about e-bikes on trails? It'd be fine over there, but it generally becomes much more.
Not in my backyard.
There you go. Now I know what he's talking about. E-lordy. So,
did you just say E-lordy?
Yeah, E-lordy. That's the Lord with the goddamn battery. So how do you feel about...
I think it would be cool to have both, you know, regular, you know, there's so many trails here, as you guys know, like with Winoga and some of the other trails that we've talked about before that are here in Central Oregon, that I think it'd be totally cool to do like half the trails one way and the mm-hmm. other half. So if you're a purist, you can go out But I really do believe that. I think it's going to help more people get into the sport of mountain biking and fat biking. And I really, honestly, I see no problem with it. I don't think I'd be out there on the trail and be like, oh, that guy, you know, you could totally tell he didn't pedal up here. I just don't know any mountain bikers that are not, like, super supportive of just seeing people being active. I think you're going to run more into the hikers and stuff like that. But, you know, we have so much dedicated single track here that I'm sure we could figure out a way to make it work.
Cool. Well, that is a very, that's an open mind, man.
That's a well-reasoned response.
I like that. Kindness is cool. You're a good dude, man. Thanks for calling the show.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me on.
Yeah. All right, take care.
Talk to you again.
Do we have another caller, or should we go right to Ian?
We should go right to Ian.
Ian, first of all, have you ridden an e-bike, sir?
I have ridden an e-bike, although I have not ridden an e-mountain bike.
Okay.
And this is where my personal conflict.
And your personal trails that perhaps you've even built. How do you feel about e-bikes being on your backyard single track?
I don't really care for it. I think that e-bikes are a great idea, and they have a place in the bike industry. In Holland, where I live now, their bikes are everywhere, and there are a lot of e-bikes, but they're used for commuting.
Mm-hmm.
Or for pleasure, and they're great for people who are older that need the extra mobility. Or if you're covering long distances. But I think for trails, we need to reserve those to the people who sort of built them, who earned their way to ride on them. And I equate it sort of to the Mount Everest tourism, right? Just because you can go doesn't mean you should go.
We were actually talking about a chairlift up Mount Everest the other day, saying, how would that ruin that experience? Now anybody can go up there.
Sir Edmund Hillary. Spinning in his grave. Or did he discover the North Pole?
No. He's a mountain climber.
You were
talking about being in Holland now and how they're a lot more popular there. I just read something today that said they'd sold 40,000 e-bikes in Norway last year.
Yeah, they're huge. And even the e-mountain bikes, although not so much in Holland that I see because everything is so flat, but there are lots of places in the Alps that are doing basically tourism, trying to get people in that they're renting e-fat bikes and allowing people to go out. They also have a tremendous amount of terrain, and it's all open access. But I don't think they have as much issue with, you know, sharing a lot of single track. It's a lot more wide open.
Well, all right.
Should we take another call?
We should.
I think we will. Welcome to the radio program. Who do we have on the line?
Hey, guys. It's Dave Schlabowski.
Hey, Dave.
Dave.
How's it going?
I'm doing really well. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. We're talking e-bikes today a little bit.
Yeah.
By the way, if people don't know, Dave, why don't you just tell folks a little bit about who Dave is?
I'm Dave. I work for the Wisconsin Bike Fed in the Milwaukee office. Among other things, I started the Santa Cycle Rampage and a little ride across Wisconsin that we do. I actually do own an e-bike.
Nice.
That's true. I've ridden your e-bike with a fat bike strapped to the back of it.
Exactly. My slick Northpaw on the back. Yeah, exactly.
So you ride a, is it a Yuba? It's a Yuba, right?
Yeah, I've got a Yuba Spicy Curry. I've test ridden a whole bunch of other e-bikes as well. Mostly cargo bikes. That, you know, I use mine mostly for urban cargo stuff, not for off-road riding or recreational riding, but I'm pretty familiar with them and the legislation around them and stuff like that.
So does the Bike Fed have an official stance on this yet?
You know, we don't have an official stance. Since I'm sort of the major e-bike user on Bike Fed staff, my position tends to be our official stance. I'm generally a supporter of them. I just got a call today from somebody who's saying, hey, I want to do a ride across Wisconsin. Do you allow people to do it on e-bikes? And my response was like, sure. The other people on staff were like, hey, I don't know. Is that okay? I'm like, well, it's not a race. There's no such thing as motor doping in a recreational ride. So I was like, sure. If that's the way you want to do our ride, that's fine with us. So, and that's generally my opinion about e-bikes. I think they're a good thing for those who want to use them for the general reasons they want to use them.
What about on your local trails there along the river in Tosa? Would you feel okay with people riding dedicated mountain bike trails on an assisted bicycle?
You know, I hate to start judging other people about why they choose whatever bike they choose, right? So I ride my, just as an example, I ride my my bike, you know, cargo bike to work quite a bit. And there's a couple of guys that I know locally that are pro racers or semi-pro racers that commute to work kind of on my route around my schedule. And I can't catch them if I see them in front of me on the Hank Aaron State Trail, because they can go faster on their regular road bikes than I can go on my, you know, 350-watt assist cargo bike. So if some guy is using an e-assist mountain bike or fat bike and it's within the legal limits because it helps him ride more, I'd rather see more butts on bikes personally, and the more people riding, the better is generally my opinion. I do understand that there are going to be those tuner guys that are out there with, 3,000 watt, aftermarket motors, throwing them on their bikes, and they're never pedaling, and they're going 30 miles an hour down the trail. I think we do need some sort of, common ground. We got to come to some agreement on this, that an electric motorcycle doesn't quite count, even if it has pedals. But where that is, I'm not exactly sure. But in general, right now, I'm of the opinion that, hey, if it meets the legal limit for what a local bike shop can sell, and it helps you ride your bike more, go out and ride.
So do you think the pedal assist thing is a good delineator, that if it doesn't have a throttle, that, you know, having to pedal and being assisted is different than just mashing on a button or twisting a grip?
Personally, that's what I like. I mean, and that's the way my Yuba works. It doesn't have a throttle at all. Unless I'm pedaling, it doesn't.
But your pedals just become the throttle. I've ridden one. Pedals just become the throttle.
I think it's different, especially on a trail, because when you stop pedaling, you stop getting assist instead of gassing it into the tree.
So what's the difference between soft pedaling forward and twisting your wrist? Nothing. It adds power at your will.
Here's what I think the difference is, and I know people with e-assist bikes like these. They've got, 40 amp hour, 80 volt plus battery packs on them, and 3,000 watt motors, and they can ride 50 miles at 30 miles an hour without ever touching their pedals. I mean, like I said, I hate to split hairs and try to, like,
that's a nightmare,
I'm not a legislative sort of guy, but to me, that's an electric motorcycle. That's not, I pedal every mile I ride, whether I'm going, 12 miles an hour or 20 miles an hour, I'm pedaling every mile I go on mine. And I think that is kind of a delineator.
Right on. I appreciate hearing from Dave about his ideas.
We didn't even think about souping the people that would soup up e-bikes. We just thought, well, these bikes are alarming enough that it was worth opening up the discussion. So you actually opened up a huge can of worms there by saying that people are going to add these aftermarket upgrades. And, oh, my God, that's so... So you believe in at least some kind of legislation to keep those off of trails, right?
Well, remember this, too, when we're talking about the vast majority of e-bike users. The vast majority of them are people that are like, hey, you know what? I love to ride my bike, but I will ride a lot more if I've got this little assist. So for my cargo bike, it's like, hey, I can do a liquor store run and haul back 3 cases of beer and over a big hill, and I'm going to make that trip on my bike instead of in my car. If you're a recreational rider and you're older with bad knees or something, it's like, I can keep up with my friends who don't have bad knees, and I can ride with them. So I'm super positive about all those reasons to use electric bikes. But But I do agree that we got to think cautiously about this because, yeah, the tuners are out there. And, you know, just like with cars.
Right. Speaking of tuners.
There, you know, souping up their Honda.
I think we should call up Vin Diesel and see if Triple X whatever is going to be an e-bike, like Triple X 10, the e-bike movie.
Right. It could be the next film. The next blockbuster.
Starring Vin Diesel as Pee Wee Herman.
Cool,
well,
Dave.
Well, Dave, thanks for being the positive message of goodwill for e-bikes and calling us on the show and everything that you do for bicycle advocacy here in the beautiful state of Wisconsin.
Thanks again, Dave.
Well, thanks, guys. I'm going to go back and join George Stickle down in my rec room and watch some television event that's on right now.
Right on. Say hey to George.
All right.
Okay, Dave.
All right, boys.
Bye.
See ya.
Tribe.
Well, that was the voice of reason. You know, he's been walking the line and doing the between different user groups for so long. I think he's kind of developed.
But he actually brought up like the horror scenario of of not only these things. And the reason why, one of the reasons why I wanted to have this discussion is these bikes are coming. They're coming to a bike shop near you. So anybody with $5,000 and a sense of adventure is going to buy one of these things, and they're going to end up on my trail. So when that happens, I think there should be some rules in place for those people. One, for the amount of power that they can apply, that bike, those bikes can have. Two, the training those people should have. And really, able-bodied people, why?
Sounds like you have a career as a politician.
Well, I don't know. I just don't think able-bodied people have a reason to take them on single track. You know, if you want to use them for hauling gear or hauling your groceries or a carless lifestyle, or if you have a disability that this keeps you riding, all for it, all for those things. But when it comes to healthy people taking these on single track trails that I spent time building, I didn't build single track trails for people on e-bikes. I built them for cyclists,
for old guys on fat bikes.
And young people on 29ers and any kind of pedal legal. I mean, think about that. Think about what Dave said, is that these people can get 5 hours at 30 miles an hour without pedaling out of these bikes.
Yeah, that's a motorcycle.
And it seems like an easy thing to say, any single track trail that doesn't want an e-bike on there, to say, well, no motorized vehicles.
Right, because it's a motorized vehicle. But it doesn't matter whether it has a pedal or a throttle.
I think you have to have an asterisk there to say, unless you get a disability license, you go through this training process, and then when you know how to handle it, when to ride it, when not to ride it, all of those things, then you should be able to get in there. But those are going to be small number of people.
Right.
But if you have equal number of pedal bikes and equal number of e-bikes on a single track system, I think you're going to have you're going to have cyclist on cyclist conflict.
Rage. See, I've ridden a 50-pound electric fat bike on trails, and I don't find it that fun at all. I'd rather ride my bike for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't respond anywhere near the same. Yeah, going up the couple little hills or something, it's kind of cool for that small portion of it. But the other 95% of the ride, it's just such a handicap because it doesn't work as well at all. So I have ridden them.
Yeah, I have ridden that Specialized Levo that we're currently testing. And last Saturday or Sunday, I was out for a ride at the Kettle Moraine Trails, and I came across our tester, Craig Smith, who was riding that Levo, and he was at one of the big intersections where people tend to stop. And, you know, people were ready to kind of lynch the dude.
Yeah, but Craig isn't one of the special cases. I would say it's totally appropriate for him.
Right. But I had to say, well, look, Craig has a degenerative muscle disease. His legs don't work, and this is how he's staying in the saddle.
Right on.
So, and that's, I think, Craig.
Hey, speaking of people staying in the saddle.
Yeah. Let's take a call.
Who should we talk to now? Welcome.
Hello,
welcome
there.
Welcome to the radio program. Can you recognize that voice? That's Old Bear right there.
Old Bear. What's going on, dude?
I was listening to you guys talk about those e-bikes. I don't know.
No?
Guy still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I heard a big click.
Yeah, that was Gomez cocking the pistol so he could.
Yeah, so I could, I don't know what.
Leave this
Gomez, world. You don't want to shoot me because
not
I'm
you.
With you.
Oh. No, I just like to light my cigarettes with a pistol.
You know, I read a long time ago in a magazine, a good magazine, one without all the fluff advertisements, Mountain Biking Magazine. But they were talking about how that, you know, the BLM out there in Moab said no e-bikes on the single track out there. I don't know if they've changed that, have they?
I don't know. We actually asked IMBA to be a part of the show. They're too busy with their World Summit to give us some insights. They recommended that we talk to Morgan at People for Bikes that you didn't hear at the beginning of the show, but will be inserted in there somewhere in this editorial process.
You're smoke and mirroring everybody. We were
looking for advocates to step up and say, well, this is the official policy. But what I'm finding more or less is that there really isn't an official policy
not yet.
And yet, the Big Red S has their factory in China revving up the production on full suspension, meant for single track, 20 mile an hour.
27 plus.
Yeah, 27 plus full suspension bike, as well as a really sweet fat bike with a Bluto and XX1 drivetrain and a dropper post. I mean, these bikes are made for off-roading. I have it from Specialized. Yes, these bikes are meant to go off-road. And Specialized said that they worked with IMBA. But at this IMBA summit, it appears as though they're going to solidify some sort of policy on e-bikes. And that's one of the reasons why we asked people to call in and talk about e-bikes. We hoped that we would be able to provide a little bit of education about what they are.
Edumification. So Old Bear, have you ridden an e-bike, any style e-bike yet?
I don't intend to.
It's going to be like crack. You'll never get off that thing.
I'll tell you why. I want to stay in shape, what I call the natural way, on my fat bike. I mean, it would be great if I had outrageous arthritis in my limbs or something could assist me, but I haven't hit that yet. I haven't hit that plateau yet. You know, I have arthritis in my shoulder. So what? But as far as an e-bike goes, I mean, even down here, you know, we have that Berryman Trail. Mm-hmm. I could see some guy from the city coming down there on his e-bike and getting injured, or getting just so wore out that he can't go any further. How is he going to get help in the middle of the wilderness?
There you go. You get out there 3 hours and your battery goes. You have a 60-pound bike that you can't necessarily pedal back. But, you know, that could happen with a regular bike, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially if your brakes lock up.
If your brakes lock up or if you've got a lot of frame bags on there and you can carry more beers than you can detoxify your liver and you pass out and then
you know these guys,
end up in bed with a raccoon or a gnome.
Spooning.
I really appreciate you guys doing this because we need to get a voice, a unified voice about e-bikes. I mean, they're great, like you guys said, for somebody with a disability. But for the average, not average, but the regular cyclist, it's of no use, really, other than, like you said, maybe hauling your gear or your groceries, you know. Some guy gets out there in the wilderness, like out in the Slick Rock, if they allowed him there. Somebody mm-hmm. gets way out the back in Slick Rock and has a problem, either mechanically or physically, or both. I mean, that he could kill somebody in nothing flat, especially if they think they're just going to be out there for 20 minutes riding the thing, you know, with no hydration or anything. That's just ludicrous.
All right. That's the bottom line.
You heard it from Old Bear.
Old Bear, our engineer, Bobby, he's been giving me the, we have three more callers, so we're going to send you off to slumber time, and we're going to take the next caller. Thanks for calling, dude.
Thanks, Old Bear.
I'm going to go turn in. We'll see you guys later.
All see you, right. Old Bear.
Bye, brother.
JK was like, whoop.
Hey, welcome to the radio program.
Bike radio.
How's it going?
It's going great.
We got
Gomez. Are you getting lazy on us? And now you're going to ride an electric bike?
We got Wade talking to Gomez now.
Well, Wade, just a shallow walk in the water.
I want to try one out.
I had to get rid of that thing. I had to get that out of my house. I had it in my house for 2 days, and I was like, I have to get this out of my house. So, yeah, I wrote it. And honestly, like we said we wanted to provide some education. Is I have ridden one of these bikes on the trails, and, of course, I turned it up to 11 eventually. You know, I started out on the lower settings, and then I was like, well, let's just give it a try. And, you know, it never spun the tire. It never seemed to do more damage than a normal mountain bike would. So that's why.
Well, if it doesn't do gas monkey burnouts, then it's a deal breaker.
See? And that's why I said after in my initial write-up or Craig's initial write-up of that Specialized Levo Turbo, is that after riding one, I'm somewhat more conflicted than I was before I rode them. Because before I rode them, I was like, not on my trail, no way, you know, only handicapped. And then anything on pavement, any place that you allow motorized vehicles, God bless you, go, ride whatever you want. But on single track, I had a problem with it. So then I rode one, and then I was like,
well, you know,
I don't know.
The way I feel about it all is, look, it's on our shoulders to be good stewards of mountain biking, fat biking, whatever you want to call it this week, as a whole. So if you can be respectful, you're not hauling bananas and running people off the cotton picking trail, hey, all the power to you.
You do realize we live in America and that there's, like, guys already, according to the Wisconsin Bike Fed, that said that they're taking the, I believe, 30 amps is the limit, and they're hocking that up to 80 amps, and, you know, they're programming these to be more motorcycle-like. But I'm telling you, that's Specialized. You can just soft pedal. Just turn those pedals so gently, and you go 20 miles an hour.
Well, they have at the local special ed dealer, they have, and there's a story behind that one I'll get into in a moment, but they had the e-assist bikes. They're not a straight electric. And you pedal the damn things, and they take off, and it's like, oh, I like this.
Right. Yeah, I think we're talking about the same animal. It's the Turbo Levo line of bikes.
Maybe so. It's kind of an assist rather than a full-blown electric.
Well, at the highest setting, and it's 100% kind of assist. What's that?
It was definitely fun to rip it around. But there again, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm kind of a purist, and you know, Sarge has no interest in being electrified. The mayor has no interest in being electrified.
Dylan went electric, but not the mayor.
Nor does the trials bike.
All right, so we didn't ask Wade any of the questions. Let's see what my screen looks like. Looks like that.
He doesn't. So yeah, one of the questions would be, he's answered one of them. He's ridden
one,
an e-bike before,
and he did say that he didn't think that he wanted to ride one on his trails. How would you feel about other people riding them on your trails? Well, do you think that your trails should come up with any special rules regarding e-assist bikes?
Well, you know, it's down to courtesy and common sense. So again, like I mentioned earlier, is as long as these people are not running you off the trail as you ride your traditional bike, cool. If they're not, you know, being jerks about doing it, going at excessive speed where there's other trail users, I don't have a problem with it. I don't foresee them doing any more trail damage than we're already doing by locking up brakes or doing whatever we're going to do with a bicycle.
Right. Same brakes. I mean, and there is a study And we'll say again that the link to the study will be in our show notes. That is a real study, as far as I could see, extensive, was done in out west trails. So, you know. Oh, more beers.
Top of the hill, boys.
Top of the hill.
Got any beers up there,
Wade?
Oh,
you guys have a beer assistant?
We don't have a beer assistant.
More or less.
The beer lackey.
Closest to the, closest to the bridge.
Really, yeah. We should rotate locations, but that would probably cause all sorts of other problems.
I think Sven should be the beer assistant tonight.
There you go.
Okay.
Wade.
I have to run all the way around the table.
You know what? You know what Sven does is he runs the switchboard. Pretty much guaranteed you'll get on the show.
I'm gonna hang up on Wade so I can go be beer guy.
All right, Wade. You've been the best guest we've had in the last 2 minutes. So we're gonna go to our next caller. Thanks for calling in. And there'll be no consolation gifts or anything. We're basically, I don't know.
Okay, that's not the purpose of the call. The purpose of the call is to have some fun and give you guys a hard time and talk about e-bikes.
Mission accomplished. All right, Wade, thanks for calling.
All right.
Bye.
Well, for now.
And now?
For something completely different. Welcome to the radio program. Who do we have on the line?
This is Spinner.
It's Spinner.
Spinner Ryerson.
We're talking e-bike, fat bike, e-bike stuff. Yeah.
Fat e-bikes.
Fat e-viking bikes.
Fatty Lumpkin bikes. Now those are cool.
Would you use a battle axe that has an electric assist for beheading and pillaging villages?
Geez, that'd just be wussy, wouldn't it?
It just wouldn't be the same. The mayhem.
Not nearly as fun.
So, Spinner, have you ever ridden an e-bike of any type?
I don't think so. If I did, I would have been out at Interbike one of these years, and I'd been too drunk to remember. So I do not believe I've ever ridden one.
And you're a trail builder, much like many people who are sitting at this table. How would you feel about an e-bike or an e-bike gang or an e-bike club coming to your trails and, I don't know, having some sushi, doing some laps?
I guess my take on it is, you know, it's not a bicycle. It's a motorcycle. And again, I've heard some of the previous conversation you guys are having. And, you know, just in a lot of the places I live, we work with a lot of different user groups. You know, there's like, you know, we have problems with, you know, and maybe not problems, but it just takes a lot of work to get, you know, get along with a group like a snowmobile group. You know, that's
or those shroomers.
Same thing with, and same thing with horses and different people. So, you know, when you start putting motorized stuff on a trail, because whether it's gas-powered or electric-powered, that's a motorized vehicle. Either way, that's how I see it. And what does that open the door to? You know, how long will it be before dirt bikes, and where do you draw the line? And I heard you're saying something about a total amperage or something, the power of the motor in the bike.
Right.
That's going to be really, really hard to regulate.
There are regulations as to what can be sold in the U.S. and sold in Europe, and I know enough to know that those are two different levels right now.
Okay.
So, and that's why, one of the reasons why I think that we need guidance, we need rules. Because as opposed to sunshine and rainbows, Wade, I believe that courtesy is...
Fakakta.
Is something that existed in the bygone eras of the past.
Yeah, this is America. We don't have that shit anymore here.
Any idiot with $5,000 is what you're going to end up with, as well as many other good, courteous, kind, respectful people. It takes all kinds, but there are those, and it only takes one or two of those, you know, that could possibly cause conflict. I think with a good set of rules, conflict can be avoided.
Is this your fourth call in already?
And the World According to Gomez is our new show. We haven't even asked JK what he thinks.
And we're going, oh, am I done? No, wait for JK.
I don't know. Did you tell? You said no. You said, how do you feel about, we haven't brought this up, grooming with e-bikes?
Well, they groom with Rokons, and those things have motors on them. They groom with snowmobiles, and those things have motors on them.
Right. Here's a good use for that.
You know, electric bike is going to pull a groomer? I don't see that happening. I don't see it making a trail worth riding.
A tiny one.
When you talk about rules, when you talk about rules for bikes, so you're talking about rules for
e-bikes.
E-bikes on your standard mountain bike trails.
Correct.
But today we have certain trails that horses and bikes can ride. We have certain trails that snowmobiles and bikes can ride. But, you know, we don't let horses on all single track, and we don't let snowmobiles on all single track.
But right now, Holmes,
our trails,
there's no rules. There's nothing stopping someone with an e-bike to go ride any trail in this state. It's nothing. There's nothing on the books.
Right. Nothing yet. Right.
Right.
But there's stuff that keeps motorcycles off the mountain bike trail. There's stuff that keeps mountain bikes off of walking trails, right? So if we can get some classification going like that, I don't know. It's going to be tough. But I'm not riding one. I know you have fun on them.
Can't we all just get along?
All right, man. We got more callers.
All right.
Okay.
Hangout Spinner, if you want. We're going to talk to some other folk, see what they got to say.
I'll keep on listening.
Right on.
Hurry on.
Welcome to the radio program. Who do we have on the line?
You got the mayor out here in the lovely Camrock area.
Fantastic. It's Chuck. Chuck, you were one of my choices for the voice of reason. And you're an advocate, and you're a trail builder. So have you ever ridden an e-bike?
I have ridden an e-bike, but I have not ridden a modern e-bike.
Okay.
You know, not a modern mountain bike e-bike.
How do you feel about e-bikes out there at the Camrock, which you have, you've dedicated a big part of your life to making those trails awesome?
Thank you. I'm just eternally torn on the whole damn thing. I'm kind of a purist myself. I think these trails were built for people that have ridden these trails. We've got some real tight technical sections and things like that, which is, you know, designed for, you know, true single track riding. Some of it's not super fast. Some areas are, but some aren't. I think some trails are going to suit themselves better to it, but, and I'm also kind of afraid of the whole, you know, where is it going to go? I mean, what we're looking at today on a mountain bike, you know, where you were talking about earlier on, where, you know, what's to stop them from upping the amperage, upping the maximum miles per hour and finding what the heck I was doing, I'd sure go in there and tinker with it and get the most out of it I could. so yeah, I think, I don't know how you stop that. Somebody that's going to go out there and, you know, I think it's a motor. So, but the flip side of that is I'm a pretty empathetic kind of guy too. So, hey, if I was, you know, half disabled from whatever, I'd love to see somebody able to do that if it allows them to be in the sport or go out on a ride with their friends. But how the heck do you regulate that, you know?
Just the same way you do driver's license, I think.
And what marijuana, too.
All of the above.
Wait, I can get a driver's license for marijuana?
Well, yeah, sure.
I am. Oh, yeah. Colorado, Washington. The
with
progressive states.
While you're riding your e-bike.
Exactly. With a cigarette lighter on it. Like those old-style car cigarette lighters. So kick ass.
That'd be cool.
That's the way it should be. Because you got an e-bike, so why not have that? An electric cigarette lighter.
Yeah, exactly. And a toaster, right? And a blender, and maybe a thumping sound system. That ought to piss off the nature lovers.
So, Chuck, have you run across anybody out on the trails already that's riding one?
I have not on the single track. We got a main, like, gravel trail, I call it, you know, limestone trail. And on some of the even grass double track, I've seen people on those trails. a couple just local people in town, and they're, you know, they're elderly, and I'm like, hey, kick ass, you're out there riding, you know? But if I ran into a 25-year-old or, heck, even somebody my age is able-bodied that's using it to shoot down rip and ride at super high speed, nah, not so much. And I wouldn't have that same reaction, I'm sure.
Right out.
You're kind of mirroring the way I feel about it. Like, yeah, there are special circumstances, but I'm ambivalent about it, and I'm feeling that it's just because I'm an old grouchy fart is the reason why I don't think they should be on there. Because I've actually ridden one,
and
I was
like, even talked. You know, I mean, that's the thing is for me too. I think there's special circumstances, but I've even talked to our rangers out here about it because we're a county park system, so state and stuff. That doesn't mean a dang thing. It's whatever the county decides,
right?
And in the county, they've said, well, you know, they kind of the same idea. And then when I brought up, you know, the special circumstance, whatever. So what? But then how the heck do you regulate that? You know,
with a big red X on the back of the rider,
a handicap placard or tattoo or hologram.
That ought to do it. I like that.
We're working on that technology right now.
Below the seat, and swinging down there like a pair of those truck balls.
Uh oh. There goes our family rating.
Right.
I already swore. Just kidding.
All right.
Well, Chuck, thanks for calling. We're going to move on to the next caller. You rock the hizzy. Right. Thanks, man.
You think we're moving on to the next caller. But you know what we're really doing? We're taking a break right now.
All right. I'm ready for a break.
We're going to take a break. You know what we're going to do when we come back from the
top
break?
Of the hill.
Break? We're gonna do a listener question when we come back.
All right.
We'll be back in a minute.
All right.
As far as you know.
So I heard you need a fat bike. Come to Zion Cyclery in Zion, Illinois. We have all brands: Trek, Borealis, Salsa, Felt, Surly, and more. Yo, we have all the cold weather gears by 45 North and Bontrager. Keep those fingers and toes nice and toasty. We fix bikes also. So you have any problem? Brakes, gears, suspension? We have the best mechanics in town. So yeah, visit us at ZionCycler.com.
You're tuned to Fat Bike Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the radio program.
We had a listener. His name is Josh, and he called.
Our one listener? No, we know that we have more than one listener tonight because we have call-ins.
He called me on the email.
Boop, beep, boop, beep, boop.
And he told me that he's been riding a Rigid Ogre, and then he does, you know, like the Dakota 5.0 and the QT100, the Back 40, these marathon-level mountain bike races that aren't on snow. And he's thinking he rode a... Muckluck with a Bluto that his buddy had, and he's thinking that fat bikes might be the answer. And he's going from a steel bike, so he's thinking about getting a steel fat bike. He's thinking about an Advocate Watchman, which is a steel bike that resembles the Muckluck's geometry. And he asked us if he should consider any other bikes in that price range, which would be about the $2,700 McThinger.
Boy, that opens up a lot of choices.
I know, that seems to be the super most common question of the world. I would say for those races, for ultra marathon races, if it were me, like, I'll play the fantasy that I'm an ultra marathon racer and say, I can't do it. I can't even imagine.
I think it all comes down to the how you're going to ride, you know?
He's going to race 50 or 100 miles on
trail. And a Watchman's a pretty good bike. I would try it.
Yeah.
I'd get 10 miles in and I'd be like, yeah, that was good.
That was fun.
Boy.
I don't know. That Bluto seems like 3 pounds of boat anchor.
$2,700.
Seems like a rigid carbon bike.
He was about how the Ogre was hurting his hands. What about that? What about throwing a Carbonara on there? Maybe getting something light just takes the edge off.
Oh, good call.
You know, on those marathon races, you're not going 40 miles an hour the whole time. You're chugging along at 12 or 15 or whatever, but especially where the Dakota 5.0 is, there's a lot of little roots and rocks. And
so maybe buy one of those $1,400 carbon salsa mucklucks and throw a $1,000 carbonara fork on there. Maybe you just saved yourself $300.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about.
You have to wear an ascot or something. What goes in Iceland? You have to wear a cod on your head or something. I don't know.
Hey, do you want to take another call, or do you want to skip over links, or what do you want to do? Let's take another call. We got a caller. Right. Since we told these folks to call in, we might as well take a call. Welcome to the radio program, caller. Thank you for calling. How may we help you? Thank you. Now it's your turn.
This is Josh, and you just addressed my email right when I called in, so I caught the tail end of that.
Oh, it's Josh. He's our listener.
Josh, how's it going? We just read your question on the air, and we basically sold you a salsa with a carbonara fork.
Hey, Mike Reamer is going to be like, Gomez, I knew you were good for something.
Gomez, what the hell? Did you get hit in the head?
All right. Well, thanks so much for reading and responding and then covering it on your show. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. Did you pick The Watchmen because it's steel?
Originally, yes. It was a recommendation from a local bike shop. I went in there with the same deal. Hey, I rode this muckluck. It was great. They said, before you buy it, ride The Watchmen. So I did, and it's a much livelier bike, so much more playful. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, maybe, but what else is out there? And so then I ran on to, you know, you guys at some point and then read about listened about the Oxo Voitec as well. So I'm actually upping my budget possibly.
Your budget?
So
I think Gomez hit on one of the key deals is the Bluto maybe isn't the right fork for a fat bike in some circumstances. Depends on what you're doing. If you're going to do a lot of big hit stuff, it probably works a little better than a carbonara, but that Lauf is light. And I think that extra 3 pounds on the front of your bike is something that you're not going to want to have there for the 5 or 10% of the time that you're actually going to use it.
And since you're already accustomed to riding a rigid bike, you're going to gain a great deal of pneumatic suspension just with a fat bike front tire. It might be worth taking that baby step. And the other thing for these ultra marathon distances that I think goes beyond your $2,700 budget, but can be done in, add that to next year's bike budget, is a lightweight set of carbon wheels for that bike.
Oh, yes.
And going tubeless. Then you can go tubeless on your aluminum wheels right away. And that's going to give you the ability to run lower pressure, have a more supple ride feel.
Supple.
So if you like steel bikes, I have one other company that I think would be interesting for you to look at, and that is Chumba USA. That is a company in Texas that makes excellent fat bikes. And boy, Vince down there.
They're named after Bar.
Yeah. Chumba.
Ursa. Bear. Ursa.
No, Ursa. Chumba.
I don't think Chumba means bear.
Oh, that's right.
What does Chumba mean?
It means Chumbawamba.
Whatever that means. Your assignment is to call the show next week and come back with 10 reasons why Gomez should never be allowed on this program again. Thank you for calling, listener.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
All right, Josh. See ya. Bye. Hey, we're almost done with this thing, but before we go, I thought we might tell folks we have two upcoming remote Dose of Fat shows.
Yeah, we're in the special segment. Ha! Yeah.
As far as you know.
So we're going up to the Winter Bike Expo in Minneapolis, Freewheel Bikes, just before Global
Stop clicking
Fat
that
Bike
thing.
Day. Ah. I knew this would get to you eventually.
It's been going on for like a half hour. I tried not to say
it. Put it next to the mic and do it. No, just kidding. So we're going up there. And that's just right before Global Fat Bike Day, which is, of course, December 3rd.
That's Freewheel's big winter bike expo.
And
On January 8th, 2017, live show at Fatter by the Lake in Zion, Illinois, nestled between the supple bosoms of Milwaukee and Chicago. Beer, music, beach ride, and
Tag Team Indian Leg Wrestling Challenge January 8th on Asbestos Beach.
Oi, Sven and Gomez, Los Barachos challenge Gary Fisher and Keith Buntrigger to a Tag Team Wrestling cage match.
Cage match.
Cage match.
By God, King.
We're going to do that, aren't we?
Yeah. But I'm sure those guys look.
I'm pretty sure they'll come. We got a whole bunch of Global Fat Bike Day events. We're getting a pretty good selection, a chunky thing, a bunch of dealy bobbers there. If you do have a Global Fat Bike Day event that you're planning, let us know about it. We'll make sure the word gets out.
Our show this evening has been brought to you by the bikes, parts, and chaos of Surly Bikes.
But wait.
There's more.
Before you go, there's more. Welcome, really? Welcome to the radio program, caller. Who do we have on the line? It's Marty Tank.
Marty from McQuanagall. How's it going, Marty?
No, O'Connell.
Akamak and Akamak. No way, you moved.
How do you pronounce that?
That's, hey, dude. You also were one of my voices of reason. How do you?
I tried really hard at that. I did.
Yeah. So have you ridden an e-bike?
I have ridden an e-bike.
Okay. So you know what they feel like.
It feels like you're really, really super fast, even when you're not.
Right, Lance Armstrong legs.
Right, so for me, I guess it's not something that I would need, but I could see where it would be something that maybe people don't ride every day or have some kind of condition that doesn't allow them to, or they have limitations. It would be a great option for
see how Marty
like
implied that.
That
he's fast?
Marty is fast. I knew Marty when he was not as fast as he is now, though. But
right,
Marty and you and I have built trail together.
We have done.
Out there at
have
Kettle.
Done.
So you're all right at them being allowed on the trails at Kettle? Because I'll tell you this already. They're already allowed there because I saw
that.
One there on Sunday.
I didn't say that.
Aha.
quit putting words in Marty's mouth.
Uh-oh.
I do have a certain take on e-bikes on mountain bike trails. Initially, I was kind of against it, mm-hmm. but since I realized just in a more general sense that anything that gets more people on bikes is a good thing, mm-hmm. and mountain bikes as well. But my, I guess, concern as a trail advocate, trail builder, is that people in general tend to push limits. And so what happens when people start bringing e-bikes on the trails that are a little too powerful for the trail and they actually start doing damage to the trail? I know people who use e-bikes on trails, and I'm glad that it's able to get them on the trails and doing something that they might not otherwise been able to do.
Mm-hmm.
But again, my concern is that if it starts tearing up the trails, especially, you know, you're talking about the state and the national level, they're really slow to change. If they start seeing that and they just shut down the trails, they kick out all mountain bikers because we didn't really see this coming. I'd like to see them start thinking about that now, like are we going to be able to put some kind of regulation in place to be like, okay, it has to be under a certain power limit so that it doesn't do damage to the trail or whatever it might look like?
There you go, power limits. And I think training. I think that you need to learn about the possible impact of what you're using,
right.
and learn how to use it responsibly.
So is that on the person, or is that on the bike shop that sells the bike, or is that on the trail steward? Who's the training portion of it going to be? Whose responsibility that going to be?
Who's making the huge piles of money? Who's collecting that $5,000 from every idiot that has $5,000?
Fatbike.com?
Not us.
Dang it! We're in the wrong business.
I'd say it's on the bike companies. Or the bike companies to fund a non-for-profit education and licensing.
So this
entity.
Is like getting your car license, only
yeah,
not
like
quite
that.
As something strenuous.
I don't have all the answers. All I know
it sounds
is
like
that
you do.
I'm concerned. I'm verklempt.
Yeah, very valid reason for being concerned, and I appreciate you having me on.
All right, Marty. He wrote his own goodbye. Look at that. He just wrote himself a... Damn. We might have a regular position open for you, Marty.
All right, Marty. Thanks very much.
See you, Marty.
Bye.
Have a good night, guys.
Learn more at surlybikes.com.
Call 818-918-2453 anytime, day or night, and leave us a message. You know?
You know? Hey, you know what else? We got new stuff in the fedbike.com shop. If you want to check out t-shirts, hoodies, heck, even coffee mugs. We sold one this week. They're in the shop. You can find a link in the show notes.
Join us next week when our event of the week will be... Question mark, question mark, question mark.
Until next time.
Till then.
You've been listening to Fat Bike Radio's weekly dose of fat. Find us on the web at fat-bike.com/radio. We'll see you next time.